Tonight is a bit of an odd topic, kind of a requested topic. I'm talking about the idea of holiday blues. And it's funny, this time of year, in some ways there's kind of an enforced happiness and joy around the holidays coming, and it's almost in some ways a reaction to that, kind of a real reaction. Not everyone is happy at this time of year. Certainly there are many people who are alone during the holidays, and COVID is intensifying that experience this year. And it can be hard for someone who's alone, who has this story that, you know, I'm alone, but everyone else is happy with their families, you know? And of course, that's a story. There are many families that are together, but, you know, there are just as many dysfunctional families as there are functional, you know, if not more so. There are some families that when they get together, it's just uninterrupted misery the whole time they're together. But they insist on doing it every year. And of course, there are also people who are, they're with their family, but for whatever reason, they don't feel seen or acknowledged. And so they feel alone, even though they're surrounded by people, you know, and that's a very different kind of aloneness than the person who is just isolated. And so there's many, many different kinds of suffering this time of year. Sometimes the holidays also bring up, for people that are getting on in years, it brings up the idea of milestones, you know, because we're all a year older every time the holidays rolls around, you know. So, you know, this holiday, you know, it's at this point in my life and I still don't have X, Y, and Z, you know, this sort of thing. And so a variety of difficult experiences around the holidays. And the first thing I would say about feelings, any of these feelings of sadness, grief, anger, regret, despair, the first thing that's important is just feeling those feelings. The woman who used to lead the Sangha, Rain, liked to say, all feelings want is to be felt. You know, and I think it's so important just to acknowledge feelings. And in particular, for people who, for whatever reason, when they're growing up, were not permitted to have certain feelings, it's very important in adult life simply to give yourself permission to feel the full palette of human feelings. And so it's important to acknowledge feelings, and even a feeling like self-pity. You know, if you've been someone who has not been allowed to have feelings, you know, let yourself have that feeling of self-pity. You know, feel it thoroughly. You know, give yourself a good, you know, several days, a week of feeling self-pity. But keep in mind that if you stay there too long, there's a kind of stuckness in staying there too long. And it's one thing to feel the raw emotions, but there's a way that when the strategic mind gets involved, it starts to weave stories, and then the strategic mind can amp up the misery in all kinds of extraordinary ways, and completely disconnect ourselves from ourselves. So it's, on the one hand, it's very important to feel the feelings, but not to let the strategic mind run its whole drama show of magnifying the feelings. These difficult feelings are important to feel, and there's also a way that people can feel trapped in those feelings, can feel stuck in those feelings. And I'll name that our stuckness, all the ways that we get stuck in life, are often due to trauma. It's the natural structure of a fully healthy human being is one of flow, one where there's tremendous flow and tremendous fluidity in the body, in the emotions, in the psyche. trauma is what locks us up. You know, we get overwhelmed in some way, and then we're locked up. We block the flow. We're holding on, you know. And a lot of human stuckness has roots in trauma of one kind or another. And so how do we work with this? How do we work with, you know, when we're done with just the feelings and we want to actually move them in some way? There's a technique I'll talk about, and this is a technique that I'm stealing this wholesale from Tara Brach. She calls this technique RAIN, R-A-I-N, this four-step technique of recognize, allow, investigate, non-identify. And so I want to talk about these steps a little bit. Recognize. And the recognize is about recognizing primary experience. First of all, recognizing the feelings of the physical body. What's going on with the physical body? Is the physical body tight? Is it tired? Where is it holding tension? You know, that sort of thing. And also recognizing what I would call the primary emotions. And again, it's very important to separate out the head chatter, you know, the emotionally driven head chatter from the actual emotions. And I think I would also make a distinction between, I don't know if there's probably a formal term for this, I'm just going to call them primary emotions versus story emotions. And what do I mean by that? If I say I feel offended, there's a story there. Like, in other words, if I'm offended, there must be an offended by something or by someone. It's almost a word that contains a story in it. You know, whereas sad is a primary emotion. I can be sad and there doesn't have to be a story attached to it. And so it's important as we're thinking about our emotions to really pay attention to which emotion words have stories in them versus which ones are primary emotions. You can often find, it's very useful if you find these emotion color wheels, you can search the web and find an emotion color wheel. And usually what it is a wheel of just primary emotion. And so the first step is about recognizing just what is going on in the present moment. What is going on with my body? What is going on with my emotions? Just what are the energies that are presenting in the present moment? For some people, there'll be a lot of sensation in the moment. For other people, especially people who have been shut down in some way, there might be very little to feel in the present moment. You know, they might just be able to feel certain parts of their body or certain just the first articulation of deeper emotions. And so it's fine just to be with whatever presents in the moment. And the second step, which in some ways has to accompany the first step, to allow. And I think a good way to think about this is really I would draw on Jung's idea that we all have otherness in the psyche. There's the ego, that's me, but then there's all kinds of otherness in the psyche, my shadow, the place where my dreams come from, this sort of thing. Any of the places that I have pushed away at earlier points in life, I don't want to feel that, I don't want to deal with that, that kind of thing. I've othered those places. And when I'm reapproaching them in the healing process, they're presenting themselves to me as others. And this is why allowing is so important. You know, imagine if you tried to make a friend with somebody new and you immediately present, well, if you're going to be my friend, I'm going to present you with this whole list of rules you need to follow. Like, no one would want to be friends with someone like that, you know? Like, in other words, we only approach people when we feel an invitation from them, when we feel a kind of allowing, you know? It's only when people are allowed to be as they are that they really show up as their best selves. And it's much in the same way with our own internal otherness. You know, insofar as we want any broken part of ourselves to be able to heal, to be able to integrate, to be able to, as it were, rise up to its best self, we have to allow it. We have to allow it to be whatever it's going to be. And its first statements might be grief, or it might be anger, or it might be, you know, we don't know, you know, but just to allow it to be what it is. Healing is not a doing. Healing is not an action. Healing is very much a surrender and an allowing. And so that's the second step. Recognize and then allow. The third step, the way that Tara Brach frames it, is investigate with kindness. You know, investigate, but it can't be a clinical, logical kind of investigating. You know, again, think about how you might talk to a person in front of you who was traumatized, you know. You wouldn't be dealing with them in a cold clinical way. You'd be trying to comfort them, like, you know, what do you need? You know, how can I help you? You know, this sort of thing. And much in the same way, when we're dealing with a broken part of ourselves, you almost have to imagine that you're dealing with a traumatized other before you, you know? And what's the level of compassion and caring you can bring to this conversation, you know? And again, sometimes just the allowing is enough for this part to start communicating. And the last step is hardest. The last step, non-identify, and this is a real challenge for ego, and it's a challenge because I often like to say that pain, internal pain, it's kind of the great internal advertising agency, you know? And like advertisements, the message of pain is often something frequently repeated. It's often very loud. And often, like advertisement, it contains little or no truth value, you know? So the pain might say, you know, be saying things like, you're not lovable, or you're not worthy, or you're, you know, you're going to be alone forever, you know. And there's a feeling there that's real. But the verbal message of the pain is not real. The trouble is that the mind is so gullible, the strategic mind just gullibly believes the message of pain. And they, oh, well, maybe it means I'm going to be alone forever, you know, like this sort of thing. We really have to be exceptionally wise in the way that we relate to our places of pain. And it's much like the way that, say, a parent of a two-year-old relates to a two-year-old having a temper tantrum. If you've ever been around a two-year-old, three-year-old having a temper tantrum, you know, they say all kinds of wild things, you know, I want to eat ice cream forever. I hate mommy. I hate daddy. I want to live somewhere else, you know, like, it's actually a very sad parent who believes all the things the two-year-old says and responds to them. Like that's where abuse actually happens. It's the wise parent who basically discounts everything coming out of the kid's mouth and attends to their real needs, you know? And that's exactly what we need to do with our own places, many of which are infantile. Many of them have been traumatized in early life, you know. And so can we completely neglect and discount the verbal message, but respond with love and caring and respond with an intuitive sense of what these places really need? Part of the message of pain, part of the feeling of pain is it's about me, you know. I'm the one who's, you know, I'm the one feeling the shame, the grief, the rage, the... And it may be an energy passing through me, you know, that really, in some sense, our real self, I mean, certainly according to Buddhist teaching, our real self is simply the awareness, simply the container of awareness. And part of the challenge of healing is really growing our container so that we can hold more and more potent expressions of our own nature. And so walking in this direction, taking up this practice of rain as a way to deal with our difficult emotions, requires incredible responsibility. Really, all the world's spiritual traditions ask a tremendous amount of responsibility from us. It's so easy to go into the place of blame. It's so easy to, you know, cook up the stories that, you know, my life would be better if not for this other thing, not for this outside thing or those people doing that thing over there, you know. Be very suspicious of any story that you have that you can't be happy because of some concatenation in the external world, you know. I mean, it's not to say that there aren't real injustices and real things that we need to fight. But I think even the real injustices, we fight much better when we're coming from a place of vitality and joy rather than from a place of feeling oppressed by them. So I'll share the quote sheet. So at the top, I spell out the steps of the rain process. A Native American proverb, we can only be what we give ourselves the power to be. This great scholar Oyejizu, who wrote a Buddhist commentary on the I Ching, wrote, in terms of the contemplating mind, this means that afflictions, bad habits, illness, bedevilments, conceit, and false views are all excellent objects for the exercise of complete all-at-once sensation of confusion and seeing the truth. You know, which is a kind of a more high-fluent kind of way of saying it's all grist for the mill, essentially. C.S. Lewis says, there's no excess of goodness. You cannot go too far in the right direction, you know. And so just to work with what is the right direction for you? What is it that brings you alive? Move in that direction. Abraham Maslow says, in any given moment, we have two options, to step forward into growth and to step back into safety. And that's true. And it is true that our life moves forward the more that we're stepping into growth. And it's also true that, you know, there are moments that we all need to just step back into safety for a little bit before we start walking forward again. And it's important to give yourself permission to have that tidal relationship. You know, none of us need to be in, like, you know, full speed forward growth 100% of the time. You know, it's about recognizing what you can handle in any moment. Psychologist Leo Buscaglia says, if we wish to free ourselves from enslavement, we must choose freedom and the responsibility that it entails. Thich Nhat Hanh says, it's like a mother when the baby is crying. She picks up the baby and she holds the baby tenderly in her arms. Your pain, your anxiety is your baby. You have to take care of it. You have to go back to yourself to recognize the suffering in you, embrace the suffering, and you get a relief. Anne Frank said, "The best remedy for those who are afraid, alone, or unhappy is to go outside, somewhere where they can be quite alone with the heavens, nature, and God." Of course, this is from a young girl who was, you know, locked in an attic for the last several years of her life. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. says, "You don't have to see the whole staircase, just take the first step." And healing is a lot like that. You know, the strategic mind wants to know, well, when will I be done? What will it be like when I'm fully healed? You know, healing is about just taking the next step that you can take. Bhagwan Sri Ranish said, "Whatever you feel, you become. It is your responsibility." Ram Dass, I love this quote of his, "If you think you're enlightened, go spend a week with your family." And it's part of the gift of family that, of course, they tap into all our deepest buttons. Byron Katie says, "Loneliness is a hunger for my true nature. I stopped looking for people to fill this." That's a powerful quote. Jack Kornfield said, "Freedom is an urgent, beautiful, and large responsibility, and a natural consequence of being human." Eckhart Tolle says, "Surrender to the grief, despair, fear, loneliness, or whatever form the suffering takes. Witness it without labeling it mentally. Embrace it, and then see how the miracle of surrender transmutes deep suffering into peace." And so, in sort of in one quote, he's describing the whole cycle of the RAIN process. Marion Williamson says, "What's difficult in life is to stay centered when somebody does or says something that tempts us to close our hearts because their heart was closed. That is hard, but that is how we grow. We grow through those circumstances in order to evolve into people who can hold to our loving center no matter what the world throws at us." And of course, it may be individual people that do something that tempts us to close our heart. It may be something that happens societally or politically or something like that that tempts us to close our heart. And it's so important to keep our heart open. Tara Brock says, "A crisis has the power to shatter our illusions, to reveal that in this impermanent world, there is no real ground to stand on, nothing we can hold on to." A very powerful quote, and just recognizing, going back to this Buddhist idea, what is the true refuge? You know, in classical Buddhism, the true refuge is the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. And part of that is just resting in our own awareness. Janet Finch says, "Loneliness is the human condition. Cultivate it. The way it tunnels into you allows your soul room to grow." Steve Jobs said, "If you haven't found it, keep looking." Very practical. David White said, "All of us feel as if we're in some kind of emotional or psychological imprisonment, even if it's just at the edges. Some of us feel completely imprisoned and are waiting for the world to go on. Throughout human history, there's been a long chronology of people who have been confined and who have taken that time actually to come down to another foundation and to emerge from their exile, their imprisonment, braver and more articulate than they were before they were removed from the world." And certainly we had a powerful example of this in Nelson Mandela in our own time. David White also said, "What conversations in my life, just by holding them, enliven me and make me larger? Who in my life makes me bigger than myself? And who in my life makes me smaller?" Those are incredibly important questions to reflect on. Cami McGovern says, "This feeling will pass. The fear is real, but the danger is not." So in other words, we have the feeling, but everything that the mind cooks up because of that feeling, we don't have to believe all that. Just pay attention to the feeling. Reshma Menakin, a man for whom I have tremendous respect, says, first of all, he just says trauma is about stuckness, very simple. He also says, what has happened to you is not your fault, but it is your responsibility. Very powerful. And Dr. Kristen Neff, who has done a tremendous amount of research on self-compassion, she says, painful feelings are, by their very nature, temporary. They will weaken over time as long as we don't prolong or amplify them through resistance or avoidance. The only way to eventually free ourselves from debilitating pain, therefore, is to be with it as it is. The only way out is through.